Good morning, everyone. It's Talk Line, another edition of Talk Line. This is Diane McGachran and Joe Moses, who's just walking in. And you are listening to, yes, another edition of Talk Line. Sorry, I was distracted. Okay, good morning, everyone. Our lines are open, ready to go. Joe will read out the numbers, or I'll read out the numbers right now while he's setting up. And the numbers are 543-5985, 543-2756. You can also call us at 1-800-995-8954. And you can send an email. You can also remain anonymous in either your call or your email, but you can email us at radio@kyuk.org, and we will read your email over the air. Now, 2 weeks ago, there was an email and I didn't get a chance to read it and I didn't bring it with me, so I apologize. So if you sent an email, resend it and we will read it today. So we have a couple of people lined up already. So good morning, John. Welcome to Talk Line.
Hi. Am I alive?
You are on the line.
Oh, man. You know what's happening is they put me on hold and it's a dead line. I can't even hear the...
Oh, you can't hear the show while you're on hold?
No.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, maybe she's got to look for the right button to push or something.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I was wanted to mention Janet Babiloff from Platinum wrote a really good article on muskox and the bison that are around. She reiterated the same thing I said last week about if you leave them alone, you know how they'll rebuild their herd and stuff like that.
Right.
And if you want a different variety of meat to eat, you can, if that's worked out okay, you can go out and have muskox or bison.
Who wrote that article again?
Janet Babila in Platinum.
Okay. And where did you read it?
In the Delta Discovery.
Thank you.
And it's a really good article to read and think about. You know, we made history by having this moratorium 5-year build-up. I never expect it to happen, but nowadays you can see moose right around the corner here.
Yeah.
And if you leave them alone, let them build up, we can one of these days go out and subsist hunt for them, you know, without having to pay an arm and a leg to go somewhere else to hunt them.
Right.
And that'd be really good. You'd have different variety of meat and stuff. And you just let them build up. That's all we have to wait. It's 5 years. And imagine how many animals will be around.
Yeah.
And if you see somebody violating these traditions, don't be afraid to turn them in. You can always remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
We're not trying to destroy our culture. We want to build it up.
Mm-hmm.
When I say culture, I mean for everybody. You know, not just natives, but everyone else that lives here, I consider native.
Mm.
And that'd be a good way to build it up, you know.
I know.
And I have another thing I want to mention real quick. When you're on Talk Line, when you say something that it might offend somebody and the person is related or somehow friends with that and warns you not to say those things, never mind that heeding. I've lived under those circumstances. I'm pretty radical. I started being radical when I was put in an orphanage, and I will continue to be radical. You tell me not to say something, thank you. I'll say it over again to make sure you hear me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not afraid of the consequences. If I lose friends on account of what I said, they're irreplaceable. I have other friends that believe in me. I told a person, I said, I'm not speaking for myself. I'm speaking for the people. And if something's wrong with the way things are going, I will be speakful. I ain't going to let that go, you know. Like I said, I may lose friendship around the corner, but guess what? Maybe I'll add some.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard like that, but don't let that bother you. You know, it's just an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you say an opinion it's an opinion not to offend nobody, but to rationalize and get some diplomacy straighter. You know, get things more in the right attitude rather than you think they're being wronged. You know, that's the way I'm going to be, and that's it. That's John. Okay,
I warned.
Pardon me?
Be warned, John will say what he needs to say.
Yeah, because I grew up in radical. They told me not to get a haircut, I grew longer. They told me to cuss a few times. They, you know, those are radical years, and I'm still like that.
Uh-huh.
I like to do a laugh about it, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I can do. I want to wish everyone, please, have a good, safe weekend, a good memorial, and please wear your life jacket, and don't drink and drive. Watch where you're going. Right now, it's really weird weather. You got all rain, sunshine, and the waves, and wear your life jacket. You know, watch over, tell people where you're going, and please don't drink and drive. And the same goes if you're pregnant. Please have a safe day, everyone.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your call, John. Next, we have Fritz Charles. Good morning, Fritz. Welcome to Talk Line.
Good morning, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
No, doing good. Couple of things. First, about the salmon talk show yesterday. You know, I called in and whatnot, but I'm also sitting in Bethel Working Group, Kuskokwim Salmon Management Working Group, one of the co-chairs also, but these are my personal opinions, not affiliated with anybody. You know, there's restrictions in place because there's so many people nowadays compared to 60, 70 years ago or even 100 years ago. The efficiency that we have nowadays, the fishing technology that we have nowadays, longer nets, faster boats, whatnot. Back then they only had not even 100 foot of net, homemade buoys, lines and everything, and the mesh was homemade. You know, they only fished after the king, majority of the kings were passed.
Mm.
And, you know, nowadays we're complaining about restrictions. Why so many restrictions? You know, look at the number of population that's grown out here in the Delta. You know, I'm bringing these up, you know, it's to make try and make people understand what we're trying to do is, you know, try and save some for the next generation so they will know what a king salmon tastes like. They will know how to fillet a king salmon. They will know how to make a dry fish out of king salmon. And, you know, it's all for our next generation to come. You know, we still want the kings to come here and, you know, there's also that bycatch, and there's also the beaver dams. If it was up to me, I'd try and, you know, take care of the beavers, but those guys say they have, I don't know, engineering degree in freaking beavers. You know, they say they help the salmon population, but I say otherwise also. They're destroying our rivers, creeks, and whatnot. Where I grew up at, you know, they're actually destroying where I'm growing up at, the beavers.
Mm-hmm.
On the other note, put my other hat on.
Hey, Fritz.
Joe?
Before you do, switch hats, what do you think about that opening tomorrow they're going to have from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a 4-inch mesh, not to exceed 60 feet in length and 45 mesh in depth?
Yeah, good luck to anybody that's out there that's going to be setting the net. You know, that's all I can say.
It's for set net only, no drifting?
No drifting, set net only.
Set net only.
submit only. And it can't be, you can't set a net where there's a sandbar. Like, for instance, in front of Oscarville, that choke point, you can't set one right there. Mm-hmm. Only on a high water mark.
Only on high water mark.
Yeah. Like, for instance, on the other side, where the main channel is, that's where you can set. Or somewhere in the eddy that goes, I don't know, wherever the high water mark is, not on a sandbar.
Okay. It doesn't even say that in their opening, I don't think. If it did,
It does.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So tomorrow's set net only, no drifting?
No drifting, set net only.
Okay.
But the non-salmon spawning tributaries, which is Greek, Johnson, Gallup, Lumavik, and Trunk River, and the one below that, they're all open. No restrictions on those whatsoever. It's got to be 300 feet or 300 yards, one of the two. I got to do some more research. It's either 300 feet or 300 yards. I think it's 300 feet from the mouth. So you can set a 7-inch, 8-inch, some gear, coho gear, whatever gear you have, you can set at Johnson, Gweek, Lomavik, not Napaskiak Slough, not Napaskiak Slough.
Okay.
So, is that it?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, another note, Bethel Search and Rescue. Okay, this coming next weekend, June 2 and 3, Bethel Search and Rescue is going to do a fiddle dance fundraiser at the ONC Multipurpose Building next weekend. So spread the word, and, you know, hopefully everybody will spread the word and people will show up and support the Bethel Search and Rescue.
Okay, thank you.
And also next week or sometime, probably sometime next week, we are going to start selling 4th of July raffle tickets for Bethel Search and Rescue. It'll be either at Leafy or Swanson's or both. First prize will be $5,000, second prize $2,500. And third prize, $1,000.
Oh, okay.
And the fourth.
So look for search and rescue members that are selling tickets.
And the fourth prize, well, Fritz will come to your birthday and sing for you.
Yeah. I don't want to go there, Joe.
No.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. So next on the line, we have Herman. Good morning, Herman. Welcome to Talk Line.
Yeah, good morning, talking to me about that fishing, what's going on, and also what's going on in Juneau with what they call budget. That's what off with Juneau. People are still signing up to save an improvement fund on that recall website. It's www.facebook.com/save the PFD. You know, they're trying to do an income tax now. It's where they're stuck. They're fighting over some want income tax too, and some don't want it. And, you know, they say they cut the budget, but they never really cut the budget. You know, if they leave that permanent fund alone and do income tax instead, that would be better. Because, you know, if they leave it alone, pretty soon we can get like $5,000 each, and that'll go back into their economy, and they can get some of that money back because, income tax, and they're letting outsiders pay for the service that they receive, but they want to use it for like Medicaid expansion and health and social services and other things, and they're using like teachers. They're saying, oh, they're laying off teachers and scare tactics like KTVU, KTVA. You know, you got to be careful of those in power right now, but go to that website. You know, if you don't do it for yourself, you know, show them, Lyman and them, that 15,000 Alaskans were living below the poverty line now because of what they did to the permanent fund. And in June, they're going to have a hearing on that in the court, and the judge will decide. But because they're fighting over the more money, them guys shooting and Pete killing them, not Pete killing other guys, you know, because they're fighting, they want more money that might stop them from restructuring the permanent fund so they can take even more money, but that won't stop the governor from vetoing those money again. So that's where they're after. On the fishing, you know, I think the people who the customary traditional use, they should be allowed to fish. And, you know, there's a silver lining in all this. Those salmon, king salmon, they take 4 years to 5 years to go to the ocean. And so far, it's been about 5 years, so there we should be seeing a pretty big runs. And I kind of have a problem with the way they're managing it. You know, they should just let people use six-inch mesh and maybe go. They have to go there and tell two people who always fish to use it. But they'll stop these thousands of people who come and try to ship out a bunch of king salmon. And for now, they should just stop using 8-inch mesh. Just use 6-inch mesh in a certain length. But I have a problem with the working group, you know, in Anyak. I wish we had indigenous users who actually use the fish, and they know how hard it hurts them elders to say people tell them they can't fish, and you got to do this, you got to set this so far from the bank, this much time, so many regulations, you know. Huh. And what the problem is, they're finding out that them weirs, a lot of times they're counting lots less fish than they really are when they do aerial surveys. And to me, when they say we got a decimus escapement, and their numbers are not accurate, and they're closing the fisheries, and they're allowing everybody to go out and fish at a certain time when a certain run might be in the river, you know, if they need to rethink, they better start being accurate in the weir counts. Because people are saying they're hurting the runs. They see those things fighting each other trying to go up. You know, they can't wait to lay their eggs. They got to lay their eggs. And they got to be really careful about that. If the aerial surveys are showing that they're giving low numbers and accurate numbers, then we got to find another system, because the very thing they're using to try to save the resource might be hurting it, you know.
Huh.
But anyway, I'll go to that website, you guys, you know.
Okay.
We call this governor and pray and ask God to use him to help us. That's the only way. We saw this coming. There'd be people here who tell us we can't hunt and fish, but we have our rights, you know. Hopefully next year there's a lot of king salmon, so don't worry. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Bye. Herman. Okay, we're going to take one more call, Casey. And then we're going to introduce Christine, who's a new news reporter here at KYUK. Casey, you're on the line. Good morning. Welcome to Talk Line.
Good morning, Diane and Joe. Just a real quick reminder here at the fire department tomorrow, starting at 10 o'clock, we're having our annual Memorial Day garage sale. Going on. We'll have lots of good food there for people to eat. There's free tables available for people that want a table, although I think we have a lot of vendors that are going to be there, so it'd be a good garage sale opportunity for people to find stuff. And so it's open for vendors at 9 o'clock, and it's open for food at 10 o'clock, and we'll probably go till about 3 o'clock. And of course, it's a fundraiser for this year. We're still working on some finishing touches on the new ambulance. So, all right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. That's always fun to go to that. Right, Joe?
As long as you're buying.
No. Okay. I guess it's not as much fun then for you. So we have a couple of callers, and if you all could hang on there, we're going to do a quick little introduction and meet Christine, who's the new reporter here at KYUK. She's the Bethel Municipal Government and Education Reporter. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
And I thought I'd ask you a few questions, and like we could get to know you a little bit. Everyone on air has probably heard you doing the news and Now, maybe some have met you on different stories, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about where you're from and how it's been transitioning to Bethel, Alaska.
Well, I'll start with saying bonjour and Minanish Neshnajek. Said hello in my language, and I said my name. And
what is
my
your
English
language?
It's a Badewadmi, which is a Potawatomi, which is a woodlands tribe from the Michigan area.
Oh, okay, good.
But yeah, I'm a member of the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation, and that's in Kansas, Mieta.
Great, great. Go ahead.
Sorry, your question was
Oh, just like what's the transition been like here? And then did you grow up on a reservation or?
I grew up in San Diego, California.
Oh.
But
that's not a reservation.
There are several there around San Diego County, but no, I did not.
Oh, so tell us about your transition here to Bethel then from San Diego.
It's been actually I think easier than I thought. I think then you just kind of get used to not having like unlimited data and stuff like that.
Oh, the data. Oh, bless you. You've really discovered the data.
Welcome to the world of technology.
Bethel.
But, you know, I think I'll really probably test my spirits when I get the winter on.
And you have lots of time to prepare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a native. You could handle it.
Yeah.
You'll adjust and adapt. So what's your journalism background? Did you go to school for that? Or what?
Yeah, I started out, actually, I went to a tribal college university in Santa Fe called the Institute of American Indian Arts. And I was there doing their creative writing program for undergrad. And I took a journalism course that was a requirement of our general stuff. And I just took to it, you know, and it was the first time that I'd ever seen other Native American journalists that I was able to work with and other female Native American journalists. And I just was really moved by that and inspired. I think I've always kind of had a passion for politics and a passion for getting information to people so that they can advocate for themselves. So that's really where my heart was. But yeah, I took that course. I got an internship at a member station in Albuquerque, which is about 45 minutes south of Santa Fe. I was there for about a year. Following that, I attended the Native American Journalists Association and was able to make connections and apply for a internship at NPR. I was an intern at the diversity department. And then from there, I went to Columbia Journalism School on a partial scholarship.
And did you finish?
I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That was a master's program.
Excellent.
Yeah. And
okay.
I just finished that last year.
Wow. So you really, once you took that journalism class, you kind of followed a path from there, huh? Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So what is it? So you came here when Chiang Mai was going on, which is a very big cultural explosion. And what was your insights about that? Or what was that like to jump into Bethel during Chiang Mai week?
I was exhausted coming in on a flight, but, you know, I think I was in a good place to be where I wasn't, my analytical mind was not. I could just kind of be in the space and presence and feel everything that was going on. And it was actually really great to kind of push through because I felt really renewed just by being there and hearing the songs and kind of just wandering around, talking to people, hearing different stories. And as luck would have it, I ran into actually an old classmate from the Institute of American Indian Arts who
she's from
Bethel.
Okay,
yeah,
that's wild.
And I hadn't seen her in years, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is meant to be.
Sometimes people have very odd meetings here in Bethel, or they'll be somewhere in the lower 48, and out of nowhere, there's somebody from Bethel. It's kind of fun. I'm wondering, as you've come here and you're probably learning a lot about the Yupik culture. Do you find relationships between Yupik culture and your tribe, or are you seeing connections in some way?
I think there's definitely a lot of connections and kinship. You know, some people have jokingly called me cuz.
Oh, you're gonna find a cousin up here. Trust me.
Everyone
does. Seems
it's a
like.
Small world.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you know, just you know, going and participating in a steam, and it's a little different than a sweat lodge, but it's also kind of, I guess I do find some similarities in, in doing steaming. So
yeah. And maybe some of the values or something. Or,
oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. And what's it like in rural? Now you've come to a rural area, and we know that the data, you've caught on that the data is different here, and you can rack up $1,000 bill in no time. So be careful. But what other things about rural Alaska are you just hit by as you've been here for a couple months?
I don't know. I guess it's all kind of more practical stuff. Most things I'm not surprised by. I kind of just enjoy the fact that it's remote. So, you know, just getting used to like, okay, well, this isn't at the store, so I'm probably going to have to order that through said internet company. I'm not going to endorse them, but I will say there is a website that I order stuff through that I don't have it.
Okay, we won't drag that out of you, Christine, but okay, we'll guess. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So yeah, I think there's just little things like that, but mostly I just kind of, I love learning about the subsistence lifestyle and something that I didn't have access to growing up and in my own culture. So I really see the value of that and the benefit that that's had here for everybody. And so, yeah, just learning more about that. But yeah, I don't think any real negatives or anything like that. So it's just kind of like, you know, you adjust and little things come up and you're like, oh, okay, so that's the thing. I can't do that. Okay, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Don't stream that. Don't do that.
Don't stream them. That's right. Well, that's a great outlook, actually. So did you have some other things you want to share with us?
I just always have a notes in front of me because I'm just in case
you're prepared.
Yeah. I think these were just kind of like questions. And stuff.
Oh, okay. Did you have some more?
No, I think we really hit upon everything. So yeah.
Yeah. Now are the stories, are there some stories that you're working on now that are particularly interesting to you or, I know they all are, but
I think overall what I'm taking away from what I'm covering on city council is probably been the most interesting in the sense of I'm learning so much. Mm-hmm. And with every, you know, ordinance, every issue that comes up, you kind of learn the history behind it from the people that you talk to and, you know, figure out who's on what side of what, who supported what, who, you know, doesn't support that now. You're just kind of you're constantly learning and it's a lot, but it's also good. And it's a really great way to kind of get to know a community and what matters to the community. And I won't go into any specifics on any stories, but I'll just say that, you know, what I'm looking forward to while being here is just making sure that I can serve the community and reporting the stories that they want to hear and what they need to hear, what everybody should be aware of that's going on. So, yeah.
Okay, that's great.
So now, other than through Chamoy Fest, how did you find out about Bethel? That's how you found out about it? Coming to the
no.
Chamoy Fest?
Actually, I applied for the job through the CPB site, which is a job line site on the Corporation for Public Broadcasting's website. It was a listing. A couple of mentors of mine contacted me and said, hey, this is a really great station. You should check this out. And I was like, oh, the population's like 60% Native. That's so rare and cool. I can go somewhere where I don't have to like fight to get a story about, you know, anything related to Natives. It's just like inherently ingrained in the culture.
Yeah.
So it's just like, oh, this is awesome. So
what's the rest of your nationality?
My mother's side is French Canadian. And
so that's where you get that accent from.
The bonjour.
Oh, bonjour is...
Oh, bonjour. Oh, I thought you said bonjour.
No, bonjour is... that's, bidet with me. So,
okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it means hello.
Gotcha.
So your mom's from Canada?
Yeah, Canadian and some Irish, but she's a part of the Trudeau Etier.
And your dad's family. From where?
My dad is from Wisconsin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Potawatomi. Born in Powers Bluff.
Good. So, well, welcome, and it's really great to have you here, and I'm glad that you you just seem to have a really nice attitude about adjusting to things, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe in.
Okay.
Which is news reporting.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And
okay.
No one will body slam you.
Don't let nobody bully you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and go to some more calls. We have a couple calls lined up. Stephen, it looks like we have Stephen. Welcome, Stephen, to Talk Line. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Thank you for waiting.
Diane?
Yes.
It's been a while since I last called.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like for the state of Alaska Department of Fish and Game to call in and give a further explanation of what that high water mark means, because I disagree with my friend Fritz Charles of where to set nets. The choke point he was calling the traditional fishing grounds for the people of Napaskiak and Oscarville. And that's where these, I recently moved there as like four or five years ago. I'm originally from Mackichuk, and they have a traditional set netting grounds too, where it's pretty close to the sandbar. So I'd like for them to call and explain what that high water mark means, because, you know, that's where I disagree with Fritz Charles.
Okay. Well, thank you for...
So, fish and game calling. And then, please, when you guys have a lot of people calling in, limit your... enforce your three-minute rule, Diane. I had to wait 20 minutes, and it took my whole break.
I apologize for that. Thank you, Stephen. Okay, so we're going to limit some of the calls. Well, we took some time to interview Christine, so that... Unfortunately, some people were ended up waiting, and one of them is Yvonne Wasily. Waska, Yvonne. Welcome to the show, Yvonne. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. I missed out on the fish talk yesterday, but I find full-blown discrimination on what fish and game and they're doing to us on this conservation. But anyway, I know them native leaders are listening in there. Hired lawyers, they need to get off you know what and do what Katie John did with for her people on the Anchorage side and get this lawsuit going.
What would you like to see in terms of the fishing, like open throughout the season or no closures? What are you what would you like to see?
Like I said before in the Fed and state meetings, mm-hmm. I have yet to hear a native elder and my native people tell me there's no kings in the river. Outsiders come to my land and waters and tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
And these two fishermen that overfished with their 50 fathom, they started all this. And there's enough kings for everybody out there. But I'm willing to do like half shackle, half a net, and cut down on my subsistence needs. But they need to quit discriminating, put that being discriminatory, and look what the Anchorage rod and reelers are doing, and them commercial fishermen. They're getting 10, 50, 11, 50 a pound, and we're getting left out, us white cane natives.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it very discrimination that's what they're doing. And tomorrow they're going to give this stupid 4-inch opening. They're going to tell us to go eat whitefish. It's like telling them to quit eating their steaks and hamburgers. Sorry if I was raising my voice, but that's the way I feel anyway.
It's all right.
But in closing, I wish they open up, and I know the native leaders are listening, and they know what to do. They have to get this lawsuit going against the feds and state fish and game.
Mm-hmm.
In closing, condolences to the families that lost their loved ones, and I hope they give them kings for their families anyway, and they're feasting. Good morning.
All right. Thank you, Yvonne.
Okay, bye.
Okay. As usual this time of year, fish talk.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for everything. You know, I could understand Yvonne's frustrations, but at the same time, when you take away what we do and have been doing for thousands of years. And like Fritz said, he's got a good explanation. We got these, the type of boat motors we have today compared to what they had in the old days, and the type of fishing gear we have today compared to old days, it's a lot more different than the, you know, I mean, so, you know, you got, it's kind of like you got to give and take, and you got to come to some kind of agreement and have both parties satisfied in terms of, you know, conservation and trying your best to get the people's needs. But at the same time, we got to think about our grandkids, you know. I mean, what are our grandkids going to do? You know, I really believe in protecting our way of life in terms of, you know, there, people say we only get what we need. We don't take more than what we need. It's always been that way. It's, you know, it's not going to change. But, you know, like Yvonne said, we got all these outsiders coming in here telling us how to live and what we can and can't do. And, you know, it's hard. But, you know, we have to understand that if we don't think of our children's future, what do they have? You know, I mean, we don't want to fish to the point where there's nothing left to, for them to go out and do their part. You know, that's it's really hard. Need to turn the monitor this way a little bit, please.
Yeah, we can't see that. Oh, there we go. Oh, okay, so we do have some calls. All right, we have Helen. Good morning, Helen. Welcome to Talk Line.
Good morning. This is Helen.
Hi.
Thank you for being there.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling.
My call.
Glad you called.
What I wanted to say was to the listening audience, I was a talk show host for 5 years where Deanna and Diane and Joe are at. We do it for free. We go up there and we listen, and we all have our own opinions. And to be targeted, I wanted to say last weekend, please don't target these people who are on the radio. They take their time out. They have their own lives. They're doing good in their lives. And they're extended to us who are listening. But today I wanted to talk about, to parents out there, please take care of your children and to watch your young adults. They're destroying people's property and lands and vandalism. Know where your children are and go look for them and go find them. And if you're going to drink, go find somebody to watch them. I wanted to say that because too many of everybody's stuff are being destroyed. And that's so, as parents, you have to talk to your children. Love is talking about what this is what you need to do to be a good person, and doing those negative things is not going to help. And I wanted to talk about alcohol, drug abuse, methamphetamine, barbiturates, heroin. They're not going to help you if you're going to try and heal and help your family. There's a lot of help here in our district. We're very lucky. We have mental health with YK, we have PATC, we have Tundra Women's Coalition, we have pastors, we have women workers in churches and pastors, social workers, family, friends. Please go help out. If you're going through stress, please go help and talk to somebody. Don't take it out on people around you if you're having issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Okay, next we have John. Good morning, John. Welcome to Talk Line.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning. You're on the air, and you need to turn down your radio, too.
Oh, I did.
Okay, good.
Oh, yes. I just want to make this really short, you know. After all these many years, we've been, like, they're paying, like, 50 cents a pound on Kings. And now that I just want to say that the King Salmon are being corrupt nowadays. Why is this government or people, why are people making it happen? You know, it's very discriminatory and very shameful to hear that people are paying $300 a pound somewhere. I know it's none of our business, but that's really corruption. People making their own prices. All right, you guys have a good morning, and tomorrow's a good opening, and I hope people are successful. Thank you.
Thank you, John. We have a call from Tuluksak, but I'm not able to pronounce your name, so could you say your name, please? You're on the air. Kayuksuk? Kayuksuk?
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Tungajitik.
Good.
Tumagdukla. A lot of fish in the river. A lot of fish.
That's good.
Which is a good sign. Tomorrow's fishermen, good luck. There's a lot of fish. So don't worry about it. Okay?
Okay.
Yekoyana.
Okay. Well, that was pleasant. Positive encouragement. Oh, good morning, Rick. Welcome to Talkline.
Good morning.
Oh, Rick. Rick Robb, the mayor.
Rick Robb, the, yes.
The mayor is on the line.
Well,
Joe's
got
getting himself ready.
I got a caller. Joe gives me grief.
I know. No,
no,
it's good.
I was dialing for 20 minutes to get on this morning.
Yeah, today's technology is unbelievable. So, you know, I wish we had a better system and stuck to the old one where we didn't have to go through all this.
Yeah, okay.
Well, here we are.
So you're alive and in color. What's on your mind? And then I'll see if I have any questions for you after
your statements you make.
I'm all ears
for your questions.
Okay.
Or do you want to know what the city council is doing?
Let's go for that first.
Okay. Well, mostly working on the budget still. Been doing that for a couple months. Plugging away at that long, laborious process.
Oh, my gosh.
It's very hard to do, but, you know, like I said, we originally presented a budget from administration with the $3.5 million in the red, and the goal is to make a balanced budget and still, you know, get all the needs met.
Where's the drain? Well, how did it get up to $3 million like that? Did something...
Increased health care costs and a lot of capital projects.
Oh, okay.
Increased staffing in a couple departments, some of which was approved, some of which was not. Additional firefighter... maybe buying a new ladder truck, a fire truck.
Okay.
So there's a lot of inflationary, you know, adjustments.
Yeah. So that the liquor store, which so far has brought in almost $700,000 in taxes, I would have thought that would help. I guess it does. It would be $4 million.
Well, there's revenue from the liquor store. Absolutely, $650,000 projected.
Now, do you ever think about what would have happened if the city had gone ahead and voted for local option and run a city-run store, and how much money would have been made that way? Do you ever look back on those votes?
probably a lot more. I know Kotzebue. The town half our size, they run a liquor store, and they make over $1 million a year in profit.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would estimate we would do double that.
Right.
At least,
well,
you know, just because our town's twice as big.
I guess that ship sailed, but boy.
Well, that's an option some people are talking about. I have mixed feelings about it. That would require a vote of the people going back under local option. There was a lot of concerns with local option, you know, the database, the felony charges, the limits, the restrictions. There's a lot of reasons people, you know, voted to get out of local option, or most people voted to get out of, the majority voted to get out of local option. You know, a lot of people didn't want to go back to it, so.
Well, they probably voted, but didn't they vote against local option because they didn't want anything being sold, any liquor being sold in Bethel?
No, when liquor was not allowed to be sold, that was a local option.
Oh, okay.
So the local options could be, you know, for 45 years we were damp, as in it's allowed but not sold, where you order your own.
Yeah.
Another local option would be nothing, you know, dry. Another local option would be a city-owned liquor store.
Yeah.
Those are all local options, and there's a few other variations of it.
Well,
all of it,
we lost out a lot.
The limits and the felonies and the fact that it's a felony if you have one can of beer too many.
Mm-hmm.
But, that you know, that's right still... now we're under no local option.
Yeah. Okay. So I just wondered about that. And then what about the, are there taxes like for other things like cigarette tax? Is that earmarked for any particular uses?
Well, none of the general taxes are earmarked for anything.
Oh, okay.
They go into the general fund and then they're used for the government operation. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we have the tobacco tax, the sales tax, the alcohol tax, and the transient lodging business tax are the biggest sources of income, and then probably the payment in lieu of taxes from the federal government.
Okay. And you know that air quality testing station that's going to happen behind AC? That doesn't cost Bethel anything, right?
No, not at all. Okay. That's a little bit of land that was given. Actually, the city owned the land when the armory moved out. The city, you know, took the land back. There's a transit systems park there, and I guess it's just like they're setting up a trailer
mm-hmm.
next to another building. I understand it's going to be a very small footprint.
Because it's very interesting, because I saw on Facebook just all of these people very upset with this air quality testing station as if it was costing the city money or what a waste. And I thought, well, no, it's free, and we'll actually get data and information, but...
Right.
So I just want to clarify that it's...
Yeah, it's a state project. Well, it's, you know, costing the state money, but the city is, you know, giving it to them for, what was it, $300 a year rent or something, you know, which is below fair market value for the public good. So it's basically a little bit of unused land, and they're going to park a trailer there and do the air quality control.
Yeah.
So it's a very minimal impact to the city.
Great.
And it doesn't cost the city anything.
Yeah. Okay, I'm glad they did that. Well, Joe, what do you have for the mayor?
What's the status of the community service patrol person that's supposed to be picking up all these loose dogs? Is that happening?
No. I could tell you no, but yes. Go ahead, Rick. Sorry.
That is supposed to be happening.
That
is supposed to be happening.
Interesting.
You know, there's so many loose dogs, it's not even funny.
I know.
And then... you know, I mean, I can't control if a dog runs in front of me and I can't stop in time. If it gets run over, it gets run over. And then you got the people mad at you for running over their dog. Well, my answer to that would be there's a Bethel Municipality Code where your dog has to be tied up or on a leash. It's not my fault.
We have a leash law. Dogs should be under tied up or on a leash. Absolutely. If a dog runs in traffic, it's safer for the driver, the pedestrians, and other cars. It's, you know, as cruel as it sounds, it's safer for people to hit the dog and not try to swerve and end up hitting another person or putting your car in a ditch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember when I was in driver's ed when I was 15, that's one of the things they told us. The dog runs in front of you, don't swerve off the road because then you could kill somebody. You know,
well, luckily, we don't have so many pedestrians and so much traffic that we have to that we don't have other options at most of the time.
For
yeah,
now.
Well, a lot of roads have a lot of pedestrians.
Yeah, I've managed to swerve to avoid a dog, but there was no one around.
So. Is your police department still short-staffed?
The police department is still short-staffed. As of the latest information, there are 5 open officer positions and 1 lieutenant. There is plans. There is 1 local gentleman right now that's in the police academy that is expected to graduate, I believe, around July 1st, and he will be a police officer. There is another gentleman that is planning to go in, that's currently a city employee, that's planning to go into the police academy, you know, about the time this guy gets out, then the next one starts shortly thereafter. And then I believe it's a 4-month academy, so he would be expected to graduate around September.
Mm-hmm.
So then we'll have 2 more people that are expected to be police officers.
Okay.
Which still is 3 positions.
Okay.
Okay.
One of the actions last night at the budget meeting was... the empty positions were funded at 50%. last year. So since we don't expect them to be filled right away, they were funded at a lower level. Although if we get all these applications, full funding would come back in.
Okay.
To get people hired. So hopefully, you know, we're going to have another officer, which is a local gentleman from, I believe, from Bethel, and should be patrolling, you know, or, you know, be a sworn police officer and do his initial academy training this summer, and then another gentleman this fall. So that's two more, and those are both expected to be around a while. Those are people that already live here, not folks from coming in from out of town.
Any word on the finance department coming up with a tax collector to collect all these taxes for the businesses that are not paying their taxes?
Oh, yeah, that.
Because I don't think it's fair to the people that do pay their taxes.
No, it's not fair to people that do pay the taxes. Yes, we need more, you know, we need more tax collection. There's no doubt about it. Are you proposing we add another position?
Well, how do cities make sure taxes are collected? And I don't know if that means adding another position.
It would be enough to find a position to where a guy could go around collecting taxes with a badge, and if you don't pay your fair share of taxes, good luck. And you know,
I don't understand. You can't say, well, we can't afford to hire a tax collector, so free Willy. Just everyone just avoid paying taxes. But this has been going on for years.
And a lot of the, you know, a lot of the businesses do pay their taxes.
Yeah.
Some of the businesses, you know, there's questions. One thing that, as citizens and customers, I mean, when we go to businesses, they are expected, and we pay money, either cash, credit card, you know, they are expected to give us a receipt that shows sales tax. And if people start asking for those, you know, that's one thing that we can all do individually to solve that problem. Because it is in the Bethel Municipal Code that when you go to when you go buy something, you're supposed to get a numbered receipt with, you know, itemized taxes on that line.
Yep.
And if we start demanding that, you know, that's something that, you know, individuals can do personally to take some personal responsibility.
Is there any way you could change your code to where it includes a cash register or electronic cash register that keeps track of all the taxes they collect and all the sales they do on a daily basis?
That is required for alcohol sales. It's not required for other sales, but that would be an idea.
I think
you should go that route. That way you know you're collecting your fair share of taxes for sure, because I see some of these businesses been here, you know, 20, 30, 40 years, and, you know, they've always, to a certain point, paid their taxes, and then you got all these new businesses popping up, and they do everything on a cash basis, and you have no way of showing how much taxes they collect, and then they laugh all the way to the bank.
Well, yeah, that's an idea worth considering. That may not be feasible for all businesses, but it may be feasible for, you know, certain ones, restaurants, things like that.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure that's good for thought.
Well, we'll probably have to go ahead and wind up here.
Okay, all right.
But thank you so much for calling and taking
our
questions.
We appreciate it, and we're glad that you're being part of the community and updating us up with our city government.
We're trying, and I know if I don't call, I get grief from Joe when I see him. So
I'm not going to let that go until you're done.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
All right, have a good day. All right, good morning, Alexi. Welcome to Talkline. You're on the air. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
And Diane.
Good morning.
Not a beautiful day, but it's good. It's watering the plants and everything. Summer.
So you can go pick berries for me.
Oh, man. I have a back. You know, my back is... You know, I'm not getting younger like you.
I'll get you a back brace and knee brace. How's that?
Yeah, that knee would be nice. I need that knee brace really, really badly. But anyway, what I have to say is before Alaska became a state, it used to be a territory all over Alaska and Lower 48 also. Mm-hmm. And they would run control by the federal. They were federal recognized, and the state had nothing to do with their recognized federal tribes. they had their own game warden. The federal game warden used to control this during the time of territory, and there was not even one state, because the state does not recognize the tribes at all, and the tribes don't recognize the state, because the state does not recognize us at all, and we shouldn't let the state control us. During the territory time, if the state wants to come into the village, they have to call first, see if they are welcome or not. Nowadays, they could hop in the plane and come down, or go into the boat and go wherever village they want to go without any asking. The state shouldn't interfere with the tribes at all. They're not supposed to. Now it's out of hand. And the state could tell the native people or the tribes, you can't do this, and you could do this, state controlling the native people. And that's what I don't like. Now, since the territory, Alaska became the state, anybody from Lower 48 could come in. Caucasian people are not recognized. And those are the people that are coming up. And they do whatever they want to do under the state, but not under the federal.
You know, Alexei, I could give you an example. If it weren't for the Alaska Territorial Guard, there wouldn't be a National Guard.
I know.
You know?
I know that. Because they are the ones that would have. That's why they called territory in the first place, and they changed it.
Yeah.
And then these two governments start splitting, and the state is just trying to interfere with our citizens' way of life. The federal should take care of that, not the state. And that's the part I don't like, the state. I know Fish and Game's listening. You people that are under the state, you don't know us. We have a long history of subsistence. And just top of that, we're just seeing a little bit of good and lots bad under the state. It's destroying our way of life. I'm a subsistence user all my life. I have been. And I'm going to keep on going like that until my body or my father up there takes my life. I agree with what Mr. Wasker is saying. He's, you know, I agree 100% what he was saying.
Uh-huh.
And the federal recognized tribes need to step up and start going forward and let the state give off. The state shouldn't have anything to do with us at all.
And over the years...
So the state should back off. You know, the state people should back off. Because and not only that, they're having 4-inch right when tomorrow, today, I forgot what day it is.
Tomorrow.
But when that starts, they should have the village peoples first. They are the subsistence users.
Oh, uh-huh.
Now, that should, every village in Kuskokwim River and in Yukon River, those villages should be the first priority of that fish, because that is their lifestyle they've been going through for hundreds of years, and it's been passed on. And right now, the way I see it, when the drifting starts, when they give them the drifting unit to go out and drift, the villages should come first before the state. The ones that are not natives, should be the ones that come in second, but they should let the villagers go first because they are the subsistence users all their life. They should let them fish for at least 3 weeks and let the non-tribe, you know, that are not recognized, those should come in after that, maybe after 3 weeks or after 4 weeks, and then they could start rotting, reeling, and let go, and whatever they want to do. We don't play with the fish. We take it seriously because it's given to us to consume for our kids and elders.
Okay, yeah, Alexa, Guayana.
Okay, Guayana. Take care.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Bye.
Next we have Howard. Good morning, Howard. Welcome to Talk Line. Thank you for waiting.
Yes. Gone by boat and around town. I've driven around and checked, you know, here and there all the time, you know. Just curious to see what's going on. When I was in the boat, I seen people going home by boat, bunch of kids in there and parents, you know.
Uh-huh.
First thing I see flying out of the boat is plastic bags, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just, they don't care. The villagers, they don't care about where they put their garbage around Bethel. It's, there's a lot of traffic, I mean, going back and forth, and that those plastic bags are going to bother or affect the fish, you know.
And they're going to last for a long, long time.
A long time, and they're not going to be on the beaches only. They're going to be at the bottom of the river.
Yeah.
Even here, I've tried to clean, you know, my yard and the yard, the road that's going by my house. Got really frustrated because I had these yellow bags and I tried to clean up over there by that old senior place there. And, somebody must have been mad or something. They threw all those bags back into that water.
Oh, no.
All that insulation that's floating, all the trash, garbage, and everything was all back in that place where I was trying to clean with my grandsons. So I just left it. I said, I'm just going to leave it, you know. I'll see how long it stays like that. And it's not only kids and young adults. It's people that are old, too. You know,
yeah.
They just don't care. They just toss them to the side there and on the road, and they'll throw cans and candy wrappers, eggs, chip eggs, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pretty common around Bethel, and people that come to Bethel, I just like to dump stuff here in Bethel.
Yeah.
And I know we try to clean up in Bethel every spring, but it doesn't seem like it's happening anymore.
Yeah.
Because you go down on the side of the road there and walk there, and you'll see nothing but empty bottles and plastic bags and candy wrappers, everything, you know.
Yeah, and then around the dumpsters, holy cow!
Oh,
can't even go there. I go out walking a lot out on the tundra, out past old BIA area, and I could be out in the middle of really beautiful place, and there'll be empty water bottles and. Believe it or not, I also have come across Pampers where somebody has changed their baby while they were berry picking and left the Pampers more than once. So I sometimes bring a big bag myself, and I just decide, okay, on my way back, I'll just pick up everything I can and, you know, drag it back to my car. But I just, that's a really difficult thing. The trash, I'm not sure what is going on there with that, but there's a lot. And when we had the low water recently, I was around Brown Slough, and
Wow. Without the water, there's all kinds of stuff left in there. There's tires. Anyway.
Don't be surprised. If you go to the other villages there, too, you'll see the same thing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody teaches nobody anything there about keeping cleaner, you know.
Yeah.
Picking up after yourself, you know. Nobody does that.
Hey, Howard.
Yes.
Remember when Bethel was a little bit smaller with a few less people? The whole community got together. We did cleanup, greenup. The cleanup, greenup was sponsored by the city. They gave kids bikes for first place or the most bags picked up. And then we had a picnic. And it's not like that anymore. We're too unhuman not to come together as a culture, be one as human, and take care of our community, no matter whether you're black, yellow, white, pink, or purple.
Yep, that's true.
You know? All of a sudden, everybody's turning their cheek because I'm black and you're white or whatever. You know, it's not about that anymore. You know, this day and age, we all have to come together. We all have to work as one.
Yep. Well, like around, Diane said around the dumpsters.
Yeah.
How are we going to put a whole big king-size mattress in the dumpster, and you know, all those big dressers and broken down tables and stuff like that.
Mattresses.
Yes, yes. Boy, it's terrible. I mean, doesn't somebody in the city pick up garbage and goes back and cleans their own dumpster area, or to keep the dumpster so that you know, have a flatbed or something, pick up this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than let it sit there for a month or too, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
And as far as vehicles, I'm one that's got some around my house, you know? And I just don't have the cash to pay $300 and have something bring to the dump with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you have a month or 2 months of free pickup with the equipment they got to bring to the dump, you know?
Yeah.
I tried to clean up around there, but like I said, you know, I don't have so much garbage around my house because I'm constantly picking it up, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for that and for calling in. We're going to have to kind of move on, but
okay, all right. Thank you, and have a good weekend. And guys, thank you for your job.
Thank you. Okay. Pick up the trash, everyone. Renee.
Maybe you need bigger bags when you go so you can collect more.
Well, I kind of walk far out there. I don't, you know, I can't drag it all back. I do drag a lot of it back, though, actually. Renee from the Cultural Center is on the line. Thank you for waiting, Renee.
Yeah, it's fine. I know you guys are quite busy today.
We're just ticking them off. The calls will come in. We go through them. What's going on?
Well, I just wanted to give an update on the summer camps that we're having over here. And the first two camps are full, so folks can't sign up for those. That's the creative clay class that happens next week. That one's full. And the first week of art camp is full, which is June 5th to the 9th. We do have about 10 slots left in the second week of art camp, which is June 12th to the 16th. So Laura's out of town today, but she will be back in the office on Monday, and that's who you want to call to make register. And her number is 543-4515, or stop by the college or the cultural center. I think she's going to be working out of my office because I'm gone starting Monday. And then theater camp, for those of you interested in and your kids getting into theater, is in the afternoon, 12th through the 16th, and there are openings in that. So you could have some your kids in the morning camp and then also in the afternoon in the theater camp. Same week, we have creative writing. For those kids who really like to write or tell stories, this is a perfect class. That's also in the afternoon of June 12th to the 16th.
Nice.
And then June 19 to 23 is our Native Arts class. We're going to have Marie Alfred doing story knives with the kids. And Agnes McIntyre is going to be doing some crocheting, and she's going to make, they're going to make some sewing kits. That's a limited number of students, so that's about half full. If you're interested, call up for that. And then the June 19th, there's a dance and theater camps, morning and afternoon, and the week of June 26th to 30, there's also dance and theater camps, and those are still open for enrollment. So call Laura at 543-4515 and chat with her about registering.
Okay.
And that's all I have, actually.
Okay. Thank you,
Pretty
Renee.
Pretty limited. Yeah.
There's a lot going on. How long are you out of town for? How long are you gone for?
I'm gone until June 23rd. I'll be back in the office on June 25th.
Oh, okay. Most of the month. Okay.
Yep.
Well, thank you.
Gonna be gone. All right. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
A lot of events. Okay.
Phone number, sure to give us a call, or 543-5985, 543-2756, 1-800-995-8954, or you could always email us at radio@kyk.org. You know, regarding this opening tomorrow, what they don't consider is the historically, in terms of where people have set their nets, that's what we've been doing for hundreds of years, and all of a sudden they want us to set them somewhere else where they don't consider. If you set your net other than where you've been setting them, we set them where they won't be ripped up, torn, or dragged away by the current.
Mm-hmm.
And now what, all of a sudden they want us to change it? Hmm. You know, it's one thing to be on the other side. It's one thing to be on this side. Until you come together and meet in the middle and understand how things are done. You know, I'm sure the Fish and Game have done their share of set nets. And if they set them in the right place, they do good. If they set them in the wrong place, they get ripped, torn, or mm-hmm. you could lose a whole net within a matter of minutes.
Do you think the numbers of fish have been dropping over the years?
It's based upon other people's information. And we can't verify whether or not they're telling the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
So you're thinking that maybe the salmon numbers have not dropped?
Well, I never said that.
I'm just asking.
You asked me a specific question. Oh, yeah. I gave you a specific answer. We put our trust into these people that manage the fish.
Mm-hmm.
We trust what the numbers they give us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you find mistakes consistently or every so often, the weir's not doing this, the weir's not doing that, it got put in the wrong place, it got buried under a sandbar, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're putting them on the part of the river where they're not using, and they're using the other side. And,
oh, right.
You know, I mean, there's always a...
So that makes you question the data that comes from that.
Well,
because
you
sometimes
could hear people complain about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people go out there, they have their own planes, their own private airplanes, they go boating, and then, you know, then the Fish and Game says, oh, we made a mistake where we put the weir because it was upside down, it wasn't counting all the fish that went by. For example, on the Yukon, they had that problem several years ago. They had put the fish counter in a certain place of the river,
mm-hmm.
come to find out it wasn't accurate because it was, when it got set, it turned or switched.
Mm-hmm. So you're thinking that it's not clear to you that there's been a decline in king salmon population.
Well, for an example, look at the weir at, where was it, Wainwright? You know, that was, that's one example. We as people, irregardless of what your status is as indigenous, when you do your best to put the people that are overseeing any kind of game management, you know, mm-hmm. if you're going to do something, do it right the first time. That way there won't mm-hmm. be no question of whether or not you're doing it right or wrong, good or bad, or it's done accordingly. The way you see fit will give you the best adequate numbers, or just to make up a number.
But I think there have been declines in the king salmon population. And
it has to do with a lot of things. Not
there's
just,
a lot of factors.
There's a lot of factors. You got the high seas fishing.
The
we know that for a fact.
Yep.
That's a
given.
And
the ocean is changing, and the fry that, well, the younger fish that make it stay here a couple of years then make it to the ocean. The conditions.
So, you know, there's some statistics, for example, like I was saying earlier, we know the high sea trawlers are catching, we know they're catching salmon, but are the numbers accurate that are being reported?
Right.
Okay, we need to go.
We have a couple calls that came in. Dave, good morning, Dave. Welcome to Talkline.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Calling in about the ATG Memorial Park. Last Saturday, some volunteers came out and helped us clean some planter beds. And people were out there picking up trash all around the cemetery. Several acres were cleaned up. And this is a community project, and volunteers operate this ATG Memorial Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's all a volunteer community thing. And we're getting ready to open up the park. People are invited to come and have a picnic. People who need exercise, we have walking trails.
Mm-hmm.
If people want to come out and help a little bit, have a picnic. But the most important reason to go out is to honor 1,435 men from the Yukon-Kuskokwim area that served their country during wartime. As you know, the Japanese invaded Alaska, and the mission of these men were to defend this area. They did well. The Japanese did not invade this part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
When you go out, you will see 1,435 names on a bronze wall of honor. We did this about 70 years late to hopefully always remember the service that these men and their families made sacrifices during the war to defend this area. Please visit the park to honor these people that served during wartime. Most are passed on. There's still about 50 alive. If you see them, salute them, honor them. They served their country. They defended their country, our country, your country. During wartime, the Japanese did not invade. I thank you for listening. My time is up. Please visit the park to honor these folks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And good day.
Thank you. It's a great park. It's a nice little place. I go there sometimes. Okay, B. Welcome, B, to Talkline.
Yes.
You'll have to turn off your radio or turn it down.
It's already down.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Thratt for all the work he's done for the vets and the graveyard out there, and also previously when he was on city council. But my problem is, not my problem, but I think the city's problem is, that a lady and I were riding around one time, and we went back to Harrelson's. There's trash bags again all over the place. And I asked her, I said, do you think we should go into and check the trash? I mean, the dump. And she said, yeah, let's go in. But we couldn't even, it was so high up, like it's not being taken care of properly. When I met Mr. Venus, used to be in charge, and that tractor was always running, always covering and always doing what he needed to do. Trash was put where they're supposed to be put. And, you know, he'd tell us where to put, where we could dump this and we could dump that. But my problem is there was plastic bags. Again, a couple of years ago, I wrote to the city council and they never did nothing about it. But now we have a new council. I wonder how many have gone riding around back at the dump to check out, and that wrote to Harrelson's. I noticed by ME, the schools there, the kids must have been out there picking up the trash bags, because usually trash even flies, the bags also flies all over. Used to be towards where the kids go to school.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I don't know what they're, you know, I don't know. I know I'm guilty of not going to city councils, but I'm tired of meetings. I'm an elder now, and I think I've done my share. Mm-hmm. But I really wish that the city would do something about the trash. Pick, have, even have those people at sleep off, or they pick up on, they pick up people from sleep off, and the ones they have for community service they have in jail or whatever it, that place is called, Tundra Center. Can't they use those, or even the people that use a sleep off? I know they don't pay for it, the villages, but maybe to for the people that are there and picked up by the police or the state troopers, they should go out there and clean up the trash, pick up the plastic bags. And I thought there was a they were going to make an ordinance of some sort a couple of years ago that there would be no more plastic bags, so groceries and stuff put in plastic bags.
Oh, I remember. That was a long time.
But
yeah.
I can't remember. You're like me, you know. I'm getting older, and I can't remember that far back anymore. But that was my complaint for today, and as for fish and game, I wonder if Native Corporation, not Bethel. Well, anyway, giving out fish. Oh, let's go back to the dumpsters. I was told that by a couple of ladies, that old ladies like my age group, they went to dump their trash, and this winter, they talk about honoring fish. You know, the fish was put on earth to feed us, and we're supposed to take care of the food and the land that was provided by the spirit up high, and but these two ladies, they went to the dumpster, and there was a plastic bag there stuck in this ice, and they were going to put it back into the dumpster, but when they opened it, there was a bunch of pike. And I was thinking that we were talking about it, that, you know, we pride ourselves. There's a lot of people in Bethel that are unable to have boats, snow machines, and all that good stuff. And if they don't want their, they should just get their limit of whatever they want, a pike. And the rest, there's a lot of people out there that they could go house to house and give feed them a few pike. Mm. And that goes for like moose meat or any kind of meat, you know. And they also went to another dumpster earlier or later, and they found the same thing on the floor. So they were on the ground, and they were going to dump that, pick that up, and it was stuck to the ground, and it happened to tear. Oh. And they found lots of rotten lush. And I said, oh, my God, they should have come to my house, and I would eat the darn things.
Wow.
But that's food for thought for that guy that called in about us, you know, our native ways. We used to treasure our native ways many years ago, but I think with all the changes that have been made to our area for rural Alaska, there's many of us that still try not to waste. There's other people out there that need the food, you know, the elders and the people that are maybe handicapped or something. They should be given that food. And I don't know if they reported it to the, I don't know who to report it to, but I guess Fish and Game. Hmm. But, and that's for the, and I know that another problem I had was last summer, you know, I don't fish, so I was going down to the thing when the Fish and Game come in and they leave fish at the harbor. And this one time I was down there, and there was somebody waiting like I was waiting early in the morning. And I said, "Oh, I didn't know you fish." And they told me, "Oh, it's for our dogs." Oh. To me, the fish that's getting off the river, the dog should come last. There's a lot of people in Bethel, like I said, that are handicapped and unable to cut and put away fish. They should have first option.
Yeah.
And there should be a way. I don't know how to solve the problem, but I'm at that point in my life where I never hardly go to meetings like I used to when I was younger to voice my opinion. But that's food for thought for anybody that's out there. I'm not trying to cause any trouble about the dump being whatever, but I thought about writing another letter about the dump, and I sure would like to know also what they're doing with the sewage, where they throw out sewage that still goes into Brown Slough.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, that stuff.
That's another whole... Yes, and now with the low water, I wonder how that'll affect when they release it.
Ooh. Really, but I was thinking to myself, I think people on the council, instead of just going to meetings, they should walk around town and talk to the people. They were elected by the people, and they should do something about the trash at the dumpster and make sure that whoever's taking care of the dumpster, I mean, the trash, the city dump out there,
is
being handled carefully. And that's enough. That's all I have to say.
Okay.
Have a good evening. I mean, have a good day.
Okay, thank
you. Enjoy the rain.
I'm not sure if we have time to cover the next two callers. Julia, do we? Okay, we'll take a call from Susan. Good morning, Susan. Welcome to Talkline.
Hello.
You don't have a lot of time. Go.
I know. That's okay. We let that lady speak. She had a lot of good things to say. The Chamber of Commerce, we do luncheons every Thursday. They're open to the public. They're on timely topics that people want to hear about. And this coming Thursday, it's at the back room of Chopsticks, and we're going to have people talk about the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, which is a newly organized group. You know, sometimes those sonars are set wrong, undercounted fish, and they have to get all these different size nets for different things, and it's just a lot of things like that going on that
exactly.
This newly organized group is going to be a good thing. So I wanted to invite the public to that, and again, that'll be Thursday at noon. Next week, and every Thursday we have timely topics.
Cool.
And then also,
that's true.
A lot of people wear glasses in town. Look around your house today for old glasses that you don't wear. I know you should have a backup pair and stuff in case they break, but I wore glasses since I was a kid. So anyway, look for glasses around the house and donate them at the fire station. I'm going to have a bin there at my table.
Oh, good.
Because Lions Club collects them, and we get them recalibrated, and they go to third world countries. And actually, some of this stuff comes back to programs in Alaska, but it's kind of complicated to explain on radio. But anyway, we're collecting old and used eyeglasses tomorrow at the fire station at my table there.
Thank you.
All right, have a good weekend, everybody.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay. That is another edition of Talkline.
Yes.
Yeah, Joe.
Before we go, I'd like to give condolences to the Greg Roziska family and to Juanita Siksikin family. Juanita's body has arrived. It's at 1104 Standard Oil Road. So I spoke to her mother. I saw her mother today at the store, and her mom and her daughter, Juanita, the body has arrived. It's here in Bethel.
Okay.
It's at Juanita's house. Again, the address is 1104 Standard Oil Road.
Mm-hmm.
So come on by and visit the family and spend some time and reminisce.
Okay.
And again, this has been Friday Morning Clockline. If you have a plan, let somebody know. If you're going to go out, please wear your PFD.
Mm-hmm.
They don't call them PFD for nothing. And don't drink and drive.
Okay.
And please continue Clean Up, Green Up.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
Express yourself.